ओ मज्ञान्तिमिदण्डस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनाक्षलाखाया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपाकृतमयं ददाति स्वापदन्तिकम्। We welcome you to the 2010 South Indian Yatra. The idea of our Yatra coming to South India was born in the hearts of several of the leading acharyas and priests of the Sri Sampradaya. A few years ago, we were in Sri Rangam as part of our yatra. And G.R. Swami, Narasingha Bhattar, Murli Bhattar, they were insisting that in a few years, in 2010, it is the 500th anniversary year of when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came and lived with us in Sri Rangam and traveled throughout the provinces of South India spreading the message of pure love of Krishna. You must come here and take your full group to celebrate with us. Their invitation was with such genuine devotion and kindness that we organized everything around that. The purpose of our yatra, the purpose of our sadhana, our seva, the very purpose of our occupation and our life is to serve the Lord and His devotees. Atha pumbir vijastrestas Varana Shrami Vibhagasha Shadushtatasya Dharamasya Sam Siddhir Hari Toshanam. The auspiciousness of whatever we do is to the degree we give satisfaction to the Lord. And the Lord has taught us by His example and by His words that by pleasing the desire of those who love Him, we can give Him the greatest satisfaction. And that those who love Him, their desire for us is to purify our own hearts so that we can be vehicles to share that love with everyone and anyone, everywhere. 500 years ago, in the year 1510, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came to this place where we are now, Kanyakumari, previously under the British rule, it was named Cape Comorin. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his bath at the holy confluence of three oceans. It's a very unique confluence where literally three oceans are meeting together at the very southernmost tip of the country of India. The Bay of Bengal, the Indian Ocean, and the Arabian Sea. Most of the holy rivers, the Ganges, the Yamuna, and so many others, have their final destination in one of these oceans. Ramanujacharya came here, Madhvacharya, Vallabhacharya, Shankaracharya. It has been one of the special holy places throughout history. And even our Srila Prabhupada, he sailed across these three oceans not far from here on the Jaladuta on his way to America. He began at the King George Dockyards in Calcutta. The journey went to Colombo, Sri Lanka, then came and went around the Kanyakumari area to Cochin, across the Arabian Sea, and near the Suez Canal in a place called Port Said. Srila Prabhupada wrote in his diary that here they have a street called Marine Drive, just like the one in Bombay Chopati Beach. So Srila Prabhupada on Jaladuta, while sailing across the world, was remembering Chopati Beach. I was very happy to find that treasure in Prabhupada's Jaladuta diary. In the month of Magh, Lord Chaitanya left Navadvip, swam across the river Ganga, and very quickly, by foot, traveled to Katwa, where he accepted the vows of a sannyasi or a swami from the great sage Keshava Bharati Maharaj. He was planning to go to Vrindavan with great eagerness, intoxicated with the idea of arriving in Vrindavan. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was dancing and chanting practically in delirious of ecstatic love. But Nityananda Prabhu understood how Mother Sachi, the Lord's mother, and all of the other devotees must be practically dying in separation. The Lord was their life, their soul, their everything. And practically without telling anyone anything, he left in the middle of the night. Nityananda Prabhu is the original guru. Because although he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead in an expansion, Lord Balaram, he perfectly knows the innermost heart of the Lord, which is to satisfy his devotees. So by Nityananda Prabhu's unconventional ways, he misguided Lord Chaitanya in the opposite direction. And in Shantipur at Advaita Bhavan, Sachi Devi and all the devotees came to meet the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he saw his mother, Sachi Mata, he prostrated himself at her holy feet. She cried, seeing her son without his beautiful long hair, which was the very essence of all spiritual opulence. With the shaved head as a renunciate, without his beautiful brahminical clothing, he was in the drab saffron color of a swami. It broke her heart. And the Lord spoke to her that I owe you my life. I owe you my everything. But somehow or other I have left, in the madness of my love for Krishna, I have left to enter into the renounced order of life. But if you like my mother, if it pleases you, I will stay with you. Sachi Devi exhibited her pure unconditional love. There was nothing that she would rather have than her Nimai living with her in her house, where she could see him every day, cook for him, serve him, love him. And without it, she would spend her whole life crying in separation. But there was a wish that she had even greater than that, to serve the wish of her son, who had descended into the world to spread the grace of God freely to everyone and anyone through the simple chanting of the holy names, through understanding how to live in a life harmonizing everything we do in devotion to the Supreme. And for a Swami to remain the rest of his life at home, people would criticize, and that would be worse than death. Sachi Devi made an appeal. The same Krishna that you're going to see in Vrindavan lives in Puri as Lord Jagannath. But Puri and Navadvip are quite close in the sense that devotees are always going back and forth. If you go there, I will regularly hear of your welfare. Please understand, in those days, Vrindavan was a very, very lonely jungle. Although everybody knew it was the place where Krishna performed his divine leelas, only a few very, very highly enlightened beings were living there, besides some simple farmers, Brijabasis. It was an isolated place. Our Lord accepted the wish of his mother and the devotees as his direction in life. in the month of Palgun, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arrived in Sri Jagannath Puri. He remained there for some time. And in the month of Chaitra, he delivered Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was one of the greatest scholars in all of the world. But he had no real appreciation for the path of pure love. His idea was only that of liberation, mukti. But Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught him in such a unique way that the perfection and the fullest form of mukti is prema, unconditional, ecstatic love for the Supreme Lord, who is all attractive and therefore is named Krishna. In the month of Vaishakha, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began his South Indian tour on the plea of finding his brother Vishwarup. But his real purpose was to freely give his grace to everyone and anyone. As a devotee, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went on the South Indian tour to establish an example. Because Lord Chaitanya's incarnation is very unique. It is prophesied thousands of years before his appearance in the Vedic literatures that the Lord would come as Chanda Avatar, with a beautiful golden complexion, and assumed the role of his own devotee to teach us by his own practical example how to achieve the perfection of life. In the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna taught us everything. The conclusion, Sarva dharman parityaja mam ekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishami masucha. Abandon all different types of worldly dharma and just surrender. Surrender to me. That is the essence. And how is that surrender done? Man manabhava mad bhakto mad yashim nandamaskuru mame vaishyashi satyante pratijani riyoshime. Always think of me and become my devotee. Worship me, offer your homage unto me, and this way you will come to me without fail. Krishna gave his promise. He told us everything. But out of his love for every living being within this creation, the Lord came again as Lord Chaitanya in the role of a devotee to teach us by his own example how to surrender, how to always remember the Lord. Radha Bhava Suvalitam Krishna Swarupam. That Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna, who has come to taste the sweetness of Radha's love and distribute that love. In this age of Kali, in this age of quarrel and hypocrisy, without discriminating who is fit or unfit, the only qualification is our sincerity to receive it. Whatever we've done, whatever we haven't done, the past is the past. If we come to the right conclusions, with the right behavior, with the right intentions, and a sincere heart, Lord Chaitanya will give us the highest perfections in this very life. So in the role of a devotee, he gave us an example. He went to each holy place. In Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, it describes hundreds of places and temples and forests and mountains that Lord Chaitanya visited. And he didn't go by buses, like all of you. He went by foot. His South Indian Yatra was 2 years, not 2 weeks. And thoroughly went everywhere. Went out of his way to visit very, very secret places. He would go to the temples, all the temples of different sampradayas. He was seeing his beloved, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahi Anya. He's in the mood of Sri Radharani feeling separation from Krishna. Lord Chaitanya was seeing his beloved Lord of Vrindavan, Shyam Sundar, and his beloved consort in all of the different temples, because he saw everything's connection to Krishna. When in Bhuvaneshwar, in the temple of Lord Shiva, he was so ecstatic to see his beloved expansion, Shiva, who's a devotee of Shiva, he was dancing in ecstasy. He taught us how to worship in the temple and how to constantly focus one's mind and heart on the Lord. Wherever he went, he was chanting the holy names. Everywhere, anywhere. And whoever he saw, he would call out to them, "Please chant Hari Hari." How could anyone refuse him? He spoke with tears of compassion and love in his eyes. Irresistible people chanted Hari Hari. And Lord Chaitanya would be so grateful to them that he embraced them. And he gave them the perfection of yoga, the highest state of samadhi, of total absorption and ecstatic love. And then he told those people, "Go back to your villages, and what I have given you, give to them." Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains it in great detail. As the Supreme Lord, he went on this South Indian tour to give love of God to everyone, the purpose of his incarnation. And also to make the holy places even more holy. Five 500 years later, many of these holy places that we're going to even though the particular temple and deities or the confluence of waters has been holy since time immemorial, and saintly people have come here and avatars have been here, still for us, the most special thing about it is that Lord Chaitanya came. Someone was asking me, why Kanyakumari? Last night. Many reasons, Kanyakumari. But one reason is enough. It's good enough for Lord Chaitanya. It's the holiest of all holy places. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, wherever he was, it made it into Vrindavan, if we just remember him. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami tells us that what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did not fully give, even in Navadvip, he gave in South India. His full mercy to everyone, to anyone. In Navadvip, when he was there were many people who were very ritualistic and materialistic and were not willing to accept. And he would not force them. But in South India, everyone, people were simple. They opened their hearts, received, and attained perfection. When I was driving here a couple days ago from Trivandrum or Tiruvananthapuram, we went to Anantapadmanabh temple, then we drove to the Adi Keshava temple. And as I was driving, I looked out the window and saw a very beautiful mountain. Incredible rock formation. And I was thinking, Lord Chaitanya, he went from Kanyakumari to the Adi Keshava temple. That means he glanced upon this mountain. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is Achintya Shakti, inconceivable potencies. His glance was filled with infinite blessings and grace. By his mere glance, he could fill a receptive person with ecstatic love of God. Wherever the Lord glanced, we should understand he infused those people, he infused even those objects, the sky, the trees, the mountains, the rivers, the land. He infused it with his grace. He showered upon it his intimate blessings. Now, things that are material are temporary. They're washed away by the elements. But that which is spiritual is eternal. When Lord Chaitanya deposited his love through his glance on all the objects wherever he went, they are forever infused with that grace. This is a spiritual principle. It is said in the Bhagavatam, Bhavadvida Bhagavatas Tirata Bhuta Swayambhayam Tirati Kuravanti Tiratani Swantastena Gata Brita. that great personalities, they are like holy places personified. And because great devotees always carry the Supreme Lord within their hearts, wherever they go, the Lord, through their hearts, makes that a holy place. In fact, all the holy places are present where a pure saint is present. Someone like Srila Prabhupada or other great saints, the fact is, their every word, their every glance does have the power to give us spiritual perfection. But everything is determined by our receptivity. When our hearts are actually open to receive, then that grace can transform us. Yegatamam prapadyante tam sthithaiva bhajam yaham mama vartmanu vartanti manushya parata sarvasha. Krishna tells us, according to how you approach me, according to how you surrender to me, I will reveal myself accordingly. So every mountain here, the ocean here, wherever the Lord glanced, wherever the Lord placed his feet, it is all spiritually surcharged. And we can gain incredible blessings if simply we are receptive. When we go to Vrindavan, we are taught that the trees are kalpavriksha trees, that the Yamuna River, it's not filled with sewage. On the material plane, that's what we see. But it's the transcendental pure water of the spiritual world with lovely lotus flowers. And Sri Sri Radha Krishna and the Gopas and the Gopis are performing their eternal leelas there. And in that forest, the six Goswamis, Narottam Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, all of the great saints, they deposited their grace, their love, their ecstasies everywhere. The place is permeated with grace. That is why it is explained in the Shastra that when we go to a holy place, we can only truly benefit by associating with holy people. Om Agyan Timirandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya. They open our eyes so that we can actually see. And through their words, they open our hearts that we can actually receive. By teaching us a lifestyle, a form of sadhana, we develop a spiritual character. Our receptivity is according to our humility, our gratitude, and our eagerness. Rupa Goswami calls lobha, the deep, intense eagerness for Krishna, to access his grace. When we have that eagerness, which is only possible when we have truly humble and grateful hearts. Then we are receptive. We are tuned in to that spiritual grace. When I was in the West, I was on one radio show, and I explained that there are radio waves everywhere. The evidence is, if you have your radio, you can tune into one channel and get news, tune into another channel and get some music, tune into another channel and hear a Swami speaking to a host. According to what we tune into, we're going to access that energy. Through our service attitude, through our eagerness for Krishna, which is really based on our eagerness to serve Krishna, we can tune in to that grace, which is factually not only in the words of the scripture, and practically everywhere we look. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells that I am the light of the sun and the moon. Tells us that the sun and the moon are the eyes of Krishna. And those eyes give us light so that we can see with our eyes. But Surya Narayan, Vrindavan Chandra, the sun and the moon, Krishna's eyes are simply showering love and grace through his glance. If we have receptive hearts, through our service attitude, through our sadhana, we could feel Krishna's love through the glance of the sun and the moon. And it's free for everyone. It's not only available, the sun and the moon is not accessible only to Brahmins or educated people or wealthy people or pious people. The sun and the moon is there for everyone and anyone always. Even on cloudy days, the light is still coming through, is it not? Nothing can obstruct. Even if you're living in the Arctic Circle, in the winter where there's hardly any sun, there's a moon. Krishna's loving glance. So as we are on this yatra, we should be conscious of this. That wherever we go, Lord Chaitanya has been. Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya, Balabhacharya, Shankaracharya, and innumerable saints following the lines of these great souls. They have glanced here, they have touched here, they have spoken here, they have chanted the names of God here, and that energy, they have deposited it everywhere. There are unlimited jewels, treasures, beyond human calculation. Even in such a simple thing as that mountain I was looking at. And Krishna especially manifests himself in his holy names. Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Ras Vigraha. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that the Lord's eternal beautiful form, His personality, His love, His qualities, His abode, His devotees, everything is within the name. Rupa Goswami prays for millions of tongues and millions of ears to chant. And he tells us that when the name enters his heart, it conquers him completely. He's not only expressing his own feeling, but he's teaching us what is available, what is possible for each and every one of us. The Lord comes and manifests His grace through His devotees to give us hope. There's no situation that is ever hopeless. By associating with people who have faith, we acquire faith. And in that faith, there is unlimited hope. And unlimited possibilities. We do believe in miracles. When Srila Prabhupada was asked, "Can you show me a miracle?" He said, "I have made hippies into happies." People who are addicted to materialistic things are now happy, engaged in pure spiritual activities. Such a miracle. Dinahina yata chilo harinam udharilo tara sakshi jagai madhai. The Lord gave such an extreme graphic example in the case of Jagai and Madhai to give every one of us hope. If they could do it, we could do it. By the power of the holy name of Krishna, Chandra Rai, who was like Jagai and Madhai, a murderer, a thief, an envious, arrogant, horrible person, who was willing to kill for the slightest gain for himself. Even Chandra Rai, even Jagai and Madhai, they were transformed into humble, pure-hearted devotees who tasted the highest happiness and were freed of all their karma and sins because they were receptive. Why such extreme examples? To teach us that there is always hope. The Lord is only concerned with one thing, our sincerity to do the right thing, to take shelter, to live in a mood of servitude, free of selfishness, an arrogant, envious agenda, to be willing to actually clean our hearts and pray and take shelter Lord Ram killed Ravana, Kumbhakarna, Kara Dushan, Varahadev Hiranyaksha, Krishna from Putana to Keshi to Agasura to Shishupal, and Narasingadev Hiranyakashipu, to show us that there is nothing so evil anywhere that it cannot be cleansed by the Lord. So whatever negativity is within our heart, whatever shortcomings, whatever lust or envy or anger or greed or arrogance or illusion may be within our hearts, causing us so much difficulty, making it seem so impossible. If we are just sincere, with determination, to live in a spirit of devotion and take shelter. Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana paryupashate. Krishna will help us. Gajendra was an animal, an elephant, very proud, very powerful physically, completely immersed in an animalistic life of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But when he was caught by that crocodile, fought with all of his strength, the crocodile was gaining strength in the fight because we were in the water. Gajendra was losing strength because he had nothing to eat in the water. When he was on the verge of death and he realized neither my family, my friends, my own strength, my own power, whatever I have acquired of being the king of this jungle, nothing material can save me. In a helpless state, he remembered the prayers he learned in his previous life. And he began to pray to the Lord, not to save him, to accept him as a servant. He took shelter from his heart of hearts. And when he did so, the Supreme Lord descended on Garuda. And Gajendra, what did he have to offer the Lord? There was just the lotus flower growing nearby in the body of water, and he plucked it and offered it. Patram pushpam palam toyam. Krishna doesn't accept what we offer, he accepts the intention. That flower was enough to conquer the heart of God because Gajendra was taking shelter. And on that very day, he attained spiritual perfection and was transported to the spiritual world. Sukhi, Dukhi, that beautiful story in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat tells us how Dukhi was just a very simple, poor maidservant. In those days, when parents are really unfortunate and poor and living in misery, when they would have a child, they would name the child Dukhi, thinking that fate will feel sorry for a child with that name, which means someone who is miserable, and be kind upon her. She was not educated. that she was in the association of Srivas, a great devotee. And by Srivas' association, she developed a sincere desire to serve everyone and to please the Lord. And while all the very senior avatars, expansions, and saints were bathing the Lord during the Abhishekam, Dukhi would, behind their backs, just go to the Ganges with clay pots and fill it up and put it in neat rows so that the water would be there for them to do the service. She was not expecting any honor. She just wanted to serve unconditionally. The Lord was looking only at her. He said to Srivas, "Who is this?" She said, "Her name is Dukhi. She's a maidservant." "I do not like this name Dukhi. It does not sit in my heart." The Lord said, "From this day, her name will be Sukhi, the happy one." And not only did he give her the name, he gave her the happiness. He gave her the highest treasure, the greatest wealth, the perfection of education and knowledge. Everything was given to her in that moment by the glance of the Lord, because she was receptive. And what was her receptivity? She was humble, and she just wanted to serve. So many of us read Srila Prabhupada's books or scriptures, and some of us don't read that much because we fall asleep when we read, or because our minds just go somewhere else, so many other things more important. Why? Factually, Srimad Bhagavatam is the literary incarnation of Krishna. Every word of it is none different than Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam is the grace of Srimati Radharani manifesting to all mankind in the most intimate way. Shukadev Goswami is speaking to you and me through Maharaj Parikshit. I'm remembering my dear god sister Kunti Devi. When she was at the last stages of cancer, there was no hope for her to be cured. She was already paralyzed from the waist down, emaciated, yellow in color. She was supposed to have died months before. She couldn't sit. When she was on a wheelchair, she was cooking feast for all the devotees. She just loved to serve, always grateful, never complaining. One day when I came into her room, I saw her propped up. People told me her arms were so brittle they would break if she tried to hold a book. So someone gave her a computer. She was sitting there with her little twig-like fingers clicking to make the pages go down. And she was in ecstasy. She said, "Every word I feel Srila Prabhupada, my beloved Guru Maharaj, personally, directly speaking to me. I've never experienced this before." There were tears in her eyes not of pain, but of ecstasy, of gratitude, and of love. Every word she heard and felt, Srila Prabhupada and Krishna and Radharani personally speaking to her. He said, I would not change my position for anyone else in the world. Because she was taking shelter. Because of her sincerity, she had that receptivity. And that's available for all of us. We don't necessarily have to be at the last stage of dying. It's available for all of us at any time, every time now. There's infinite hope. If we really seek shelter of holy people, of the holy names, of Hari Katha, and of the mood of humble service. The Lord and the great devotees see our intent. There is a story of Sripad Ramanujacharya. There were some little children in the area of Srirangam, and they were watching the adult pujaris serving the Lord in the temple. They would go to the temple and see the pujaris offering garlands and offering bhoga and then giving donations to sadhus by putting mahaprasad in their bowls. So they were imitating in the sand. They would make offerings out of sand. They'd make little deity out of sand. They'd make garlands out of sand. They would offer it. And one day, just after they made a Rajbhog offering of sand, Sripad Ramanujacharya came walking by. And they saw, oh, a sannyasi's coming. We should give him alms. So they ran up and said, Swamiji, we have alms for you. Ramanujacharya humbly put out his begging bowl, and they filled it with sand. But it wasn't ordinary sand. It was the sand that, for them, it was symbolic of their offering of wonderful bhoga, wonderful food. Ramanujacharya, in great happiness, accepted that sand with great love and gratitude. The story doesn't tell whether he ate it or not. With his mouth. But he definitely tasted it. And it was fully sumptuous, delicious. As he looked at it with his eyes and tasted it with his heart. In the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we hear about that one man on the river Godavari who had nothing, but he was offering a wonderful feast to Lord Narayan, and he was cooking the sweet rice. And the Lord was tasting the sweet rice that was only in this person's mind. There was no milk, there was no sugar on the physical plane, but the Lord was tasting it and accepting it and relishing it. It was just his intention. Patram pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachchati. Krishna says just a little fruit or water, flower, relief, if it's offered with devotion, I accept it. Even if you don't have that, if you offer sand with love and devotion, if that's all you have, the Lord will accept it as a great feast. In the case of those little children. Of course, if you're eating nice food yourself and you offer God sand, then what kind, that's not the intention. You offer the absolute best we have. So this hope is very important in this age of Kali, especially in the world and the state that it's in today and the way it's going. So much disease, so much pollution, so much anxiety, stress. So much suffering. Devotees are meant to embody the principle of hope for everyone. And in order to do so, we have to be filled with that hope ourselves. From a material perspective, ultimately everything is hopeless. Dukalaya mashashvatam. Janma mrityu jara vyadi dukkha doshana darshanam. Because we're all going to die. We're all going to grow old. We don't know how old we are. Prahlad told his little 5-year-old classmates, old means close to death. Padam padam yadvipadam natesham. Nobody really knows when that moment is going to come. With all the nuclear arsenals, terrorism, all sorts of terminal diseases, we just don't know what's going to happen from one moment to the next. But when we understand that we are eternal souls, mamaivam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, we're all part and parcel of Krishna. And Krishna Satchidananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. And qualitatively, like a sun ray to the sun, we are also eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajjaka Bunoi Saravanadi Sudhichiti Koriya Yudai. Love of God is within the heart of every living being. It is our nature, eternally. It simply has to be awakened. So from a spiritual perspective, each and every one of us, whether we're young or old, whether in good health or whether we're dying physically, whether we have a good job or we just got fired, whether we have a happy marriage or a very difficult relationship, we have infinite hope. Like Gajendra, like Suki, like those little children playing in the sand. There's no material qualification or disqualification. Our hope is in the grace of the Supreme Lord. And that grace is forever. It is unlimited. And every single one of us is a beloved child of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The ocean of material existence, which is impossible to cross by our own little arms, is reduced in size to the water contained in a hoofprint of a calf when we take shelter. Daivi he shugunamayi mama maya duratyaya. Yes, it's a difficult world in so many ways. But if we just take shelter by a grace that is all powerful, with sweetness, with beauty, and with love, we have infinite hope. This pilgrimage is to inspire that hope, inspire that faith, inspire that enthusiasm. And we could realize it. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, by really, sincerely taking shelter of the Lord's devotees, by serving them. By sharing our gift with the conditioned souls, by seeing every living being as our brothers and sisters, because everyone is a child of God, and being instruments of compassion. And in that spirit, crying out the holy names. Hare Krishna. Chaitanya Charitamrita tells us that one who remembers Lord Chaitanya, even the most difficult things are easy to accomplish. But for one who forgets the Lord, even easy things become extremely difficult. To remember Lord Chaitanya means to remember what he taught us. Through his words, through his life, through his devotees. Trinadapi suniche naturor ibasi hishnuna. Amani namana dena kirtaniya sadahari. To be humble like a blade of grass, tolerant like a tree, eager to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. We could receive the grace of the Lord when we are in that consciousness and chant constantly to realize that God and His name are non-different, to realize our eternal relationship with Krishna, and to realize every living being's eternal relation with Krishna, and to act accordingly as the servant of the servant of the servant. That is the treasure we have forgotten. There is a beautiful story . The guru of Ramanujacharya, Yamunacharya. When he was a young boy, he won a debate and became a king. He was a very, very devoted Brahmin student, but due to the association of his duties and all of the people who were helping him run the kingdom, he became so powerful, so wealthy. How could he resist from enjoying the incredible facilities he had? And like a cloud can temporarily cover the light of the sun, sometimes even great souls, illusion covers over them for some time. His grandfather, Natha Muni, when he was in his last days, he called his chief disciple, Ram Mishra, and told him that Yamunacharya Alambandara, who is now living as a great king in a palace, he's my grandson and I love him dearly. But my heart aches in compassion because he's completely forgot the Lord of the universe. He's forgotten the great treasure of devotion. He's totally immersed in materialistic activities, and he's so tremendously successful. Save him. Somehow or other, save him. I leave this responsibility to you. Natha Muni departed from this world. Some years later, Ram Mishra was waiting for the proper chance. By this time, Yamunacharya was about 35 years old, ruling the kingdom. He went to speak to him. But there were chariots and elephants and horses of great kings and ministers, and so many royal people in big crowds outside the gates of his palace. How will a little sadhu like him ever get to meet him? But this is the nature of the compassion of a Vaishnav or a devotee of the Lord. He never give up. When Srila Prabhupada was living in the Bowery and later in the Lower East Side, and he saw people, some were trying to kill him. Out of their minds with drugs, completely impassioned with illicit behavior. Prabhupada didn't give up hope. How to reach them? A major part of his reaching them was through prasad. Somehow or other, to find that connecting point by which people open their hearts to you. Srila Prabhupada was very innovative and creative to somehow or other find that point where people would just want his association and open their hearts to him. He was praying to Krishna on the Jaladuta, give me the words to speak to somehow or other deeply affect their hearts, to awaken that love of God that is within them. Srila Prabhupada cleaned for the people who were coming. He cooked for them. He chanted for them. He spoke to them. He encouraged them. He counseled them. He did everything just to try to somehow get them to open their hearts. And many did. So Ram Mishra, in that spirit of compassion, how to somehow or other reach the king. Most impossible person to possibly reach. So he prayed and had an idea, because he was expert in Ayurveda. He found some simple leaves, the Tuduvalai leaves, which are very medicinal. They bring about good health, peace of mind, and overall happiness. We should try to find some of those leaves here. And he saw them just growing like weeds around the palace. So he collected them and brought them to the cook in the king's kitchen. This little sadhu comes in and says, I just want, these leaves are very good for health and very good for clarity of mind and very good for peace and happiness. And because I love the king so much, I'm offering this from my heart. Please cook them and give them to the king. And the cook was a very pious man. So he said, thank you. Ram Mishra melted his heart because he was really just so sincere. And he cooked the leaves, something like spinach sock, and served it to the king. Day after day after day, every day, the king was getting these Tuduvalai leaves. And one day Ram Mishra strategically did not come with any leaves. And Yamunacharya called for the cook. He said, why are you not giving me leaves today? Tuduvalai leaves. He said, there is a sadhu that comes every day and brings these leaves. He tells me that he loves you so much. He doesn't charge anything. He doesn't want anything in return. He simply wants you to be happy and healthy and peaceful, so he's giving it out of his love. King, he said, he's not asking anything in return? Every day he's coming and bringing these leaves? Because of his love for me? Yes. If he ever comes again, I want to see him. So the next day, Ram Mishra, he came with the leaves, brought them to the cook, and the cook brought him to see the king. Yamunacharya was very grateful. People were bringing him jewels, gold, land. King wasn't very impressed by any of those things because everybody had an ulterior motive, something for themselves. But because Ram Mishra was bringing the leaves with no ulterior motive, out of compassion from his heart, those little leaves impressed the king more than land and jewels. Then Ram Mishra said, actually, I am a disciple of your grandfather, Nathamuni. And I've come because he gave me a message for you. Before he passed from this world, he told me that he has an immense treasure that he wants to give you. Yamunacharya was a very materialistic person at this time. And he really needed money. Things were happening in his kingdom. There was a lot of pressure. He needed that treasure. He said, tell me, I'll take it. Where is it? He said, I'll tell you about that treasure. It's behind seven walls. It's guarded by a huge serpent. What is it, every 6 months? A Rakshasa comes from the south to protect it. And it can only be discovered by the chanting of a mantra. Yamunacharya said, let's go. I'm ready now. I'll bring armies, ministers. Let us go. I need that treasure. He said, I cannot let you bring anyone. You have to come alone. I will take you. You see, because Ram Mishra had made that connection in the heart, Yamunacharya trusted him that he had no ulterior motives. He had faith in him that he didn't come to take something. He came to give. By giving those little leaves with no ulterior motive, his compassion opened the heart of the king to trust him. When we speak about preaching or sharing bhakti with others, this is the essence. Srila Prabhupada, our Guru Maharaj, he presented the philosophy as it is, without adulteration or compromise. But due to his compassion, his selfless concern for us, people open their hearts with trust to receive it. And that is what we must do. Follow in the footsteps. Our behavior, our motivations, should really be to just be an instrument of compassion, to serve others. Not for popularity, not for wealth. Na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam, va jagadisha kamaye, mama janmani, janmanishwari, bhavatad bhaktirohaiti kitvayi. Lord Chaitanya taught us this. How a devotee should be in his own prayer. I do not want material wealth, nor the pleasures of the opposite sex, nor fame, nor great knowledge, or even liberation from suffering. I only want to serve you, Lord, birth after birth after birth. And that's the way we should learn to be to each other. And we should pray to be that way to every living being. To serve them by being instruments of compassion, Krishna's compassion. Jamunacharya left everything and everyone to travel alone with Ram Mishra to get this treasure. But whenever they would stop to rest under a tree, Ram Mishra would read the Bhagavad Gita to him and give explanations. Little by little, because it was a long walk, they rested again and again and again. And eventually, they finished the entire Bhagavad Gita. And by that time, the dormant devotion that was totally hidden from the king's own vision began to awaken. It was like the monsoon clouds were parting and the sun was again shining. And he developed a taste for Krishna consciousness. Jamunacharya said, I'm starting to feel how totally unsatisfied I was with all my wealth and power and all these material things. From hearing Bhagavad Gita from you, I'm developing a thirst to hear more and more. Ram Mishra told him, let us stay here for a few days and just study the Bhagavad Gita. King said, I will stay. Day and night, they discussed the Bhagavad Gita. And a beautiful verse from the 12th chapter explains that those who fix their minds on me, Krishna says, I deliver them. They will cross over all obstacles and attain my abode. Yamunacharya said, I don't want anything material anymore. I have tasted the higher experience of love for Krishna. Whatever treasure my grandfather Natha Muni has given to me, I don't want it anymore. I don't even want to go back to my kingdom anymore. In fact, I'll give it away to others. I just want to follow this path of devotion. Ram Mishra said, Natha Muni would not give you a material treasure. Follow me and I'll show you where it is. He brought him through the seven gates of Sri Ranga Kshetra and brought him onto the altar. There, Ranganath, the Lord of Lakshmi. Lakshmi is the goddess of wealth and fortune. Spiritual wealth and spiritual fortune. The Supreme Lord is laying on Anantashesha, the big snake, and Vibhishan comes from Sri Lanka on a regular basis to worship the Lord and protect the Lord. And Ram Mishra said the mantra by which you can attain the treasure of love for Ranganath is his the chanting of his holy names. Sri Jamunacharya chanted the holy names and saw the beautiful form of Ranganath. The same form you'll be seeing. When Yamunacharya saw it, his hair stood on end, tears flooded his eyes, and he fell to the ground unconscious in ecstatic love of God, and then surrendered his heart, his soul, his everything. Let us see if that happens to us. It's the same Ranganath, and we're also chanting the names of the Lord. behind the seven walls. But he was receptive. By the association of a sadhu, his heart was open. By his own sincerity, he took shelter of the grace he was receiving. And that is, in fact, possible for every one of us. Maybe not immediately. But we must have hope. And with that hope, never leave the association of saintly people. Never give up our sadhana, our spiritual practices. If it takes one birth or 10 million births, it doesn't really matter. It's guaranteed. If we're sincere. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati He taught us, do not try to see Krishna. Because if you try to see Krishna, you'll see wood or stone. But try to serve Krishna in such a way that he wants to see you. Because when Krishna is pleased by our seva, Krishna reveals himself to us. Many of us have deities in our homes or in our temples. Krishna will reveal all of his opulences when we just open our hearts with sincerity through our desire to serve. In this yatra, if you look around, you'll see quite a few people. And this is only a little over half of what's going to be in the yatra. Everyone, look around, please. If you could only see what I see. There are three oceans behind me. The Bay of Bengal, the Indian Ocean, and the Arabian Sea. There is another ocean in front of me. Kanyakumari, which is famous for the confluence of three oceans, has now increased its glory as being the confluence of four oceans. An ocean of wonderful, enthusiastic, happy devotees. Many thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands. Krishna's Karuna Sindhu. He's an ocean of kindness. We want to bathe in that ocean. We want to bathe in that ocean of Krishna's kindness forever. And we can do that everywhere and anywhere. We don't even have to get wet. All we have to do is, with a humble and devoted heart, take shelter as we chant the holy names. No one gave me any times. During this yatra, like all others, it is very important that we focus on our purpose. Our purpose is to become purified and to access that infinite grace that we have been speaking of. Our purpose is preparing our hearts to be receptive, to receive it. And we do that through, as we were explaining, and will continue explaining forever, our seva, our service attitude, our enthusiasm. Enthusiasm to hear the glories of the Lord and the purpose of life. Enthusiastic to chant God's names individually and together in Sankirtan. And enthusiastic to serve. Not to think I am the enjoyer, I am the proprietor, I am the controller. In trying to give other devotees comfort and happiness, and putting them before ourselves, we can get the greatest spiritual blessing. There will be almost 5,000 people assembled together. I heard there's over 210 buses that will be taking all of us around. And our brahmacharis and others are cooking everything themselves. Every 4 days in a different location, setting up kitchens. In fact, as soon as one kitchen is set up, the whole team goes to another place to set up another kitchen. So while you're bathing in oceans and seeing deities and having kirtans and having katas and eating feasts, there's a whole team of people that are in the next place digging trenches to make huge stoves to cook for you. That's their yatra. Before the yatra begins, they're at another place, preparing the kitchen. And when we get there, they're already at another place. Service. So there may be some waiting, because after all, this is India, and however economically strong India becomes, however technologically honored it is in the world, it's still India. And we're still Indians. So there's going to be things that just don't work. And there's going to be crowds. And there's going to be things that go wrong. We shouldn't be disturbed. We should be happy that we're together with devotees. We have Krishna. We're in holy places. It's beautiful. Just be grateful, be patient, be enthusiastic, and try to serve. My experience of leading these yatras over about 25 years. Is the primary experience that inspires people when the yatra is over is not just the places they see, the temples they visit, but the quality of association they have with each other. Because the quality of association we have actually enables us to experience the places and the temples. Srila Prabhupada explains the Vaikuntha atmosphere is where everyone is thinking. Everyone else is so important. Let me serve them. If every single one of us is in that spirit, let me put all others in front of myself. Let me really be in a mood of seva to create an atmosphere that could fill the whole world with bhava, with love. When devotees share that bhava of seva, of devotion, it fills the whole world. It is an opportunity to absorb ourselves in hearing and chanting and serving. So let us not discuss anything except spiritual subjects and practical ways in which we can help to serve each other. That is real silence. Not to waste our energy or waste our time speaking or doing anything else. And let us approach every situation in a prayerful spirit. Praying that we can open our hearts to receive Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Srila Prabhupada, and the Supreme Lord's grace. And let these great ocean of devotees merge into the three other oceans, and together experience that Karuna Sindhu, that ocean of Krishna's kindness. Thank you very much. The next few days we will be discussing the different places we will be visiting. Now we'll have a few minutes of kirtan. And after the kirtan there will be announcements, which are quite important so that you know what to do. Because if you think you know what you're supposed to do, you are in illusion. Because the managers of this yatra are changing the schedule every minute. So whatever you think you're supposed to do, you better stay for the announcements to find out what is the latest. So I'm very, very grateful to all of you for taking so much time and so much energy to be with us. And my eternal gratitude to my beloved Gurudev Srila Prabhupada for bringing us all together and making all of this possible. Hare Krishna. Would you like to dance? Some devotees can sit up here also.